Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Faith Radio Mornings here on the 8th of October. I'm your host for the show, Dr. Peter Kapsner, in studio right now with my friends Paul Perreault and Logan Roush. Glad to see them. Glad you are listening as we start our day together in a new week talking about the relevant news items and special interest topics with guests from around our country. And because we are believers doing this show, we will be doing this news from the perspective of a real faith and a genuine hope. You know, as you listen, you'll probably experience our guests having different angles and opinions, but they will be anchored in the same Christian faith as we try not to be discipled by maybe Fox News or CNN, but have a different kind of show covering the news from the perspective of the King of an eternal kingdom as followers of Jesus Christ. And of course, as we try to do that each morning, we certainly love hearing from all of you. And if you want to join the show, we'd welcome a phone call or a text into the studio. And you can do so at any moment at 877-933-2484. That's 877-933-FAITH. I did get a great email from a listener last Friday afternoon who had appreciated the interview that we did with Pastor Tim Keller. We'll have a short clip from Pastor Keller later in this first hour. It's a name, Pastor Keller is a name I know that many of you enjoy reading. The listener indicated how we were talking about with Pastor Keller these issues through the lens of this tension of grace and truth. And it got me thinking that John, the disciple of Jesus, describes Jesus in the opening to his gospel as one that is filled with both grace and truth. And boy, I don't know how you process the news as you sort of do your lives, whether it's reading an old school newspaper or catching some things online through your news feed, but certainly seems we could use some grace and truth, because grace allows us to come into the light without fear so we can continue to walk towards the truth of God's kingdom. It kind of carves out a middle way between relativism on one hand and heavy-handed dogma on the other. And that's the middle way that we hope we as believers can offer to our country, can offer to our culture as light in the world, saying there is not fear with God's beautiful kingdom, but there is a truth to which we are called as well. Well, looking forward to our first hour together. Brandon Showalter of the Christian Post will join me, as he often does on Mondays, to talk through the news items. And we'll undoubtedly get to Judge, or now Justice, Brett Kavanaugh's confirmation to the Supreme Court. And we'll also talk about the Canadian Church's recent public stance on sexuality, as pastors there are rallying around the historical biblical concepts of sexuality and some potential warnings that they're suggesting may be in play for believers who hold to sort of the historical view of marriage, that maybe some people aren't going to be terribly happy with that and be prepared to have quite a bit of backlash. So Brandon will have some great topics to discuss here in a moment. After Brandon, Adam Carrington, a professor of political science from Hillsdale College, will join me, and I'll ask Adam why there are such sharp philosophical differences on the Supreme Court, what that means moving forward for our country, and about this burden of proof that Susan Collins, the senator out of Maine, offered when she decided to vote for Justice Kavanaugh, when she said, you know, I had to decide if it was more likely than not. And that was not a burden of proof I was familiar with, and so Adam, I'm sure, can go ahead and talk us through that. So that should be a great first hour ahead. Stay tuned. This is Faith Radio Mornings, and I'm glad you're with us. So the context for that tenor, Pavarotti, one of the three major tenors we know in this world, is that my guest, Brandon Showalter, who writes for the Christian Post and does such a great job, he couldn't decide on any kind of walk-up music. So we chose for him. And we know Brandon loves to sing national anthems around the world. And this, Brandon, is how we think you must sound when you're working through some sort of stanza, maybe of the Romanian national anthem.
Okay. I like your choice.
you can't. This could be a temporary. It can be just a trial run for you, Brandon. Maybe next week we'll bring out a different tenor and see how you feel about that.
I'm flattered by the comparison to Pavarotti.
Well, I love that you join us here so often on Monday mornings, Brandon. I know you write for the Christian Post, and it's one of those news organizations that we direct our listeners to because it really, you guys do such a great and thorough job of covering the news. And I'm just curious your thoughts. You know, you've covered, obviously, so much of the Supreme Court confirmation process the last couple of weeks. Did you ever see that we really would get to this point where Judge Kavanaugh became Justice Kavanaugh?
I thought it was going to happen. I know that it was a brutal, brutal fight. You could really, being here in Washington, D.C., you really could feel the tension in the air. I mean, not only was there tension, it was rage. I mean, it was probably about the worst I've ever seen, honestly. But I am not surprised that Justice Kavanaugh is now a thing. I'm actually going to be going to the White House tonight to see him sworn in the East Room. He's already taken two oaths at the Supreme Court on Saturday, but I'm heading down there tonight to watch it live. So I'm not surprised, but it was one brutal fight.
Well, and it's going to be quite a watershed moment this evening when he is confirmed. In terms of some of the culture wars, Brandon, I mean, is the news sort of exacerbating the idea that we have a pretty significant culture war going on in our country? You talk about the rage that's present. Are just general, you know, regular life people closer to each other than what would typically be the case in Washington?
I don't think the news is understating the reality of the culture war, particularly with regard to the Supreme Court. The reason that I think that this issue is as polarized as it is because the court in recent decades has decided to rule on matters of significant social matters of significant social significance, where you've got really hot button issues that I think would be better decided on by legislatures or by popular vote. One of the reasons, I mean, just to take, for example, there's been so much media discussion of Roe versus Wade, the 1973 landmark decision that legalized abortion nationwide. The reason that the culture war is as bitter as it is, I believe, is because it was decided by that high court and not worked out through legislatures. If British politics, for example, I think I've talked to British friends. They don't understand how this debate is as divisive as it is here. I mean, I know plenty of pro-life Christians in Britain, but their politics don't cut across the same cleavages, if you will. Well, the reason that it's so bitter here, I think, is because the court, inserted itself where it probably didn't belong. I mean, this should have been left to, I think, state legislatures. I think even Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, she's one of the most liberal justices on the court, has called that decision heavy-handed judicial intervention during her confirmation hearings. So that bitterness has remained, and I think the possibility that it will be chipped away or overturned was a big part of the bitterness and the rage that we've seen in the last few weeks.
When I look at either side of it too, Brandon, you see the protests that are there from more of the liberal side that are protesting the confirmation, as well as there's increasingly people coming out in support of Judge Kavanaugh, Justice Kavanaugh, because they're concerned about what the Me Too movement, if it gets weaponized like this, might mean for boys and girls and women and men, all moving forward into the future as we try to figure out this life together. You wrote an article here recently released on the Christian Post about that. What do you see relevant to the idea of if we weaponize this Me Too movement, we're going to lose the importance of the conversation? It just becomes a political theater again.
Well, that's right. I covered a rally that was taking place literally right outside the Senate building where the hearing where Dr. Ford and Judge Kavanaugh, then Judge Kavanaugh, now Justice Kavanaugh, testified. And these women were terrified that someone could come along, make an accusation, and potentially derail their future, career or opportunity and soil their reputation and provide no corroborating evidence and still that could be done. Now, many have argued that, it's just a job interview. This is not a court of law. Due process and innocent until proven guilty isn't exactly applicable here. Even so, because of the weight and the public profile of Supreme Court justices, I think those arguments really didn't sway a lot of these women that I spoke with in the article you referenced, because innocent until proven guilty is the basis of our legal system. It's a cornerstone. You have that presumption in our country. And these women were terrified that, you know, someone could come along, and if they had a grudge against their husband, their brother, their son, even if their son is completely innocent, I mean, that could potentially ruin his life. And I think it's a real concern. I mean, I do this, I mean, again, because it was a Supreme Court justice and the high-profile nature of the job that he was up for and ultimately got, it's more than just about the one incident. It communicates something deeper, even though it may not, I mean, the standard in courts wouldn't change. That it really scared a lot of people because of the tack that the Democrats took, particularly given the shady circumstances around which Dr. Ford's letter was released and leaked to the media. And it was one side of the story that didn't get told as nearly as often as those who were protesting Judge Kavanaugh's nomination was told. So it's multi-layered and, you know, many sides to this, but yes, there were a right many women who were not happy at all that someone could come along, make an allegation, and potentially, you know, derail or damage the reputation of the men in their life. And that's a story that needs to be heard as well.
It's Brandon Showalter of the Christian Post. And Brandon, before we run to break, just quickly on the other side of it, I'm hearing stories that some of the protesters that were so rageful were actually being organized and paid by liberal social groups to do that kind of protesting. And to the extent that that's true, and I'd be curious your take on that, it does take away from the importance of the conversation we need to have as a country, because people maybe like me could just say, ah, they're just protesting because they're getting paid. And it really can diminish the importance of that conversation.
There were some who were paid. There were some who were there because they generally felt the way they did. I do think that George Soros is kind of the boogeyman that is behind a lot of, you know, far left protests on a lot of issues, not just this one. But it is important, I believe, for Christians to dig into the nitty gritty issues and have those tough, substantive conversations with people who disagree with them, regardless how you feel on Judge Kavanaugh or really on any issue. And yeah, if there is paid protesters, I think that needs to be exposed, because then the purpose of that is just to manipulate perceptions through media and make noise, and so people can see, oh, these people are just protesting. But I encourage everyone to engage the substance of the issues of the day, because it's worth it to have those conversations.
Talking with Brandon Showalter of the Christian Post here on Faith Radio Mornings. When we come back from break, Brandon, we'll change the conversation a bit and cover some of the topics that you sent relative to the ever-changing norms around sexuality, both in our country but also in Canada and in Britain, including the case in which we see for the first time a parent a child who on their birth certificate is only listed a father. There is no mother. So I'll ask you about that here next on Faith Radio Mornings. It's about 21 minutes past the hour here on Faith Radio Mornings, and so enjoy the conversation with Brandon Showalter, the Christian Post. Again, if you're looking for a good, balanced Christian point of view from a news source, do go to ChristianPost.com. It's just lots of articles covering all of the topics, both here locally and around the world. Brandon, you released an article here on the 3rd of October that has the headline, United Kingdom Baby May Be First Ever Born Without a Mom, Only, quote, father as a birth parent listed on the birth certificate. Talk us through what's happening here.
Okay. Yes. The insanity never stops.
There's no end.
There is no end to it, it seems, especially in Britain. But it's happening here in the United States as well, too. What happened was that there's a woman gave birth to a child. The biological father appears not to be in the picture. The woman identifies as a man because this woman says she is transgender, and she changed all of the legal documents such that when she was giving birth, she was technically, on paper, a father. Now, despite that having no bearing in material reality, that can be done in Lincoln, in England. You can change your documents, and they are currently in the midst of debating the Gender Recognition Act, which will make self-identification even easier if it goes through. And so, yes, this woman identified as a man, and she was trying to get that officially placed on the birth certificate, but in England, apparently, the birth register requires that the mother be listed to give birth. But they're going through with, they're in the process now of trying to work all that out, and there's a lawsuit that's underway, and it's just utter insanity. It really is. There's no way to say it other than that, because we really do have to debate and say that being a woman means to be an adult human female, and that our bodies declare our sex. They aren't assigned to us at birth. They are written on every cell in our bodies, and our DNA declares who we are. But the deep confusion in our society, and in Western societies especially, is now calling this into question. And the attorney for this particular woman has argued that the law requiring that this woman be registered as a mother was, quote, no longer compatible, unquote, with modern society, given, quote, the evolvement of freedom of expression and gender equality and the protection of an individual's rights to identify as a particular gender. So we're seeing the right, so to speak, of self-will trump material reality. And that is a really scary place to be. I don't mean to stoke fear in the hearts of your listeners, but this is the kind of thing now being considered to be backed with the power, the coercive power of the state, and with the law. It's not funny. It's Orwellian. That word is overused, but this is the kind of thing that I have to report on. It's just unbelievable, but it's real.
Yeah, and to your point, I mean, we don't want to be fearful, but we don't want to be unmindful. I mean, this is significant developments here, just even around some of the Western world. And I know we'll be in Scotland next week as a family, and it's fascinating to me just how the church has emptied in so much of the UK. You can go to these beautiful cathedrals, and there just really isn't anybody in them anymore. So it really is secular government that's driving so many of the policies around what's happening with people. And I know you reported at the Christian Post about some headlines coming out of Canada with a pastor, Gavin Peacock, who's a former Premier League player for Chelsea and Newcastle as well in soccer world. And he suggested recently that eventually, when you look at history, when these things begin to take place, the church finally will get focused on by the government. And there's not a lot of great news for the church in that situation.
Well, yeah, so, you know, there is, it's kind of it's an interesting situation when that happens, because usually when there is opposition from governments, if the church knows how to respond well, and during times of persecution, that's when churches often grow, interestingly enough. Now, it's I don't believe that, you know, Christians should just roll over and take it. I think, you know, we're called to be salt and light, and salt is salty, not to be redundant. But it is, you know, Jesus promised that the gates of hell would never prevail against the church. That does not mean that the gates of hell might not prevail against it in a particular region of the world. And I don't mean to be stoking fear, but it's an unnerving kind of thing when you consider the overt hostility that many Western governments are showing to Christianity, to the church, these days. I believe that if we do not respond, they will overrun. It's becoming clearer and clearer as the days pass that many secular governments are seeking to eradicate all expressions of the Christian faith from the culture. That does exist. It's a real thing. And I think, you know, Gavin Peacock's point, the soccer player that you mentioned, is what we should consider. And we do have to contend for what's good and what's true and what's right. If we want to preserve ourselves, but if we care about the gospel. I mean, the gospel thrived in persecution, and I think we've got to rediscover our willingness to fight and do it the right way. I mean, contending and, you know, is something we really need to do it. It's, we owe it to a world that's lost to declare what's true and what's good. I mean, Jesus didn't die on a cross so we could all just sit around and do church. He's inaugurated a kingdom that we get to be a part of its advancement. So let's do it.
Now, Brandon, that is well said and a great encouragement and invitation. And that really is, to your point, that we're not going to do it with anger and violence, but there is a way to contend for the faith that isn't just rolling over either, because there really is life and death at stake here. Appreciate you joining us as you do here on Faith Radio Mornings. Really hope you enjoy your time in the White House tonight to see. I mean, that's a pretty big deal to be able to be in the White House to see such a historic moment.
It is. I'm kind of pinching myself. I've been to the White House a couple times before, but never for something like this.
Well, enjoy your time there. I look forward to debriefing on that next time you come on Faith Radio Mornings. Have a great week, Brandon.
Thank you so much, Peter. Have a good one.
We'll take a break for Lighten Up and bottom of the hour news. And when we come back, Adam Carrington, who is a regular contributor here from Hillsdale College, will join me. I'll ask Adam quite a few questions about the Supreme Court moving forward and what we can expect for the ideological split that's happening there. So a lot more to come in this first hour of Faith Radio Mornings. That was a great Ken Davis segment this morning about cats and purring. We have three cats at home and can identify quite well with that. You reach down to purr and they sort of walk away and play finicky with you. Now, on the other side of it, though, and Logan and I were chatting in the studio here, one of my producers, and he's a big dog guy. And I have news for Logan that they came out last week and said it's been proven that dogs really aren't any more intelligent than pigeons. So we have lots to get to. I'm sure that will not divide our country even further between cats and dogs, as if we need that. Lots more to come here in this hour. I know Adam Carrington will be on the line shortly, and I'm going to ask Adam a bit about the standard of proof that the senator from Maine, Susan Collins, offered in this Justice Kavanaugh proceedings around more likely than not and what that means in the future in this Me Too movement. So lots more to come here on Faith Radio Mornings. Last Friday on Faith Radio, we are joined by Pastor Dr. Timothy Keller, who obviously writes a lot of books, familiar name to many of you. And he released a book titled The Prodigal Prophet, which was about the prophet Jonah, and Jonah having to go to Assyria to bring the message of grace in a situation he didn't want to.
The Assyrians were very wicked people, and yet, in the end, they actually they respond to God's mercy better than Jonah does. What's that saying? It's not trying to confuse us. It's not trying to say, well, it's all gray and there's no right or wrong. No, what it's really saying is even the good guys have a lot of sin in them, and even the sinners have the image of God in them, and therefore we should all be looking at each other as sinners saved by grace. We should not be lording it over other people. We should certainly not be looking down one race on another race. Christianity is this great leveler. It's this great humbler, because if we're saved by grace, then there's no one that we should feel superior to. We should respond to everyone with respect and grace.
It's a fun segment to be able to talk with Pastor Keller, and he had just so much insight from the book of Jonah relative to our lives today. If you want to head to that entire segment and catch that entire segment, you can head to myfaithradio.com, search for Timothy Keller, and also would recommend his book, The Prodigal Prophet. I know I was talking with afternoon show host Bill Arnold over the weekend. He said he had read it and really, really enjoyed all the principles of the book. So it's a great book to pick up. We have Adam Carrington on the line from Hillsdale College, and I can see that we're going to talk quite a bit about the Supreme Court and, most importantly, what we see for the future among this ideological division in our country.
If you dare commit the cultural sin of suggesting America has a strong Christian founding, be prepared for some name-calling. This is Jim Garlow. Say the words "founded on Judeo-Christian values" and you'll raise eyebrows. Those words certainly run counter to the modern idea that America was founded as a secular nation. One of the few things which strident atheists and some modern Christian theologians agree on is that America did not have a strong Christian founding. The title of a book by Cornell University professor sums it up about their thinking. The book is entitled The Godless Constitution. Really? Just because the culture has reached agreement on this doesn't make it so. John Adams was right. Facts are stubborn things. Much of today's beliefs about religion in the founding era is based on modern opinion, not historical fact. There's more at jimdarla.com.
We are back with Faith Radio Mornings, and Adam Carrington, who's a professor of political science at Hillsdale College, is joining me. I certainly enjoy the time with Adam each, about every other week here on Faith Radio Mornings. We have Adam on and talk through some of the political structures of the day. Good morning, Adam.
Good morning. How are you doing today?
Well, a little under the weather, but doing all right, and certainly following the proceedings of the Supreme Court. And Adam, do we think we're going to see some of the energy dissipate that's been so prevalent these last 4 to 6 weeks, or is it just going to maybe seem like it's going to get worse from here, especially heading into the midterms?
I actually, and this isn't typical for an election season, but I have to think that it levels off a little bit. Yes, people will be very engaged with the election coming forward, but I just don't think, unless something else comes down the pipe, I should actually say that, I don't see how anything could get people as engaged and enraged and involved, actually, as this has. It's really taken parts of the Republican Party that were not energized and energized them, and just taken even maybe a little tick higher where the Democrats are. So I could actually see things leveling off a bit, partly because a lot of people that aren't politicos might just need a little bit of a break for a week or two.
Yeah, it really did get kind of weary, and especially after it seemed like it was over, and then we were into the FBI investigation, and just thought, how long is this going to carry on, especially when it felt more politics than it felt authentic sort of investigation.
Yes, and I even think that those who are calling for it, Senator Flake and others, were more doing it for the positioning politically to say we didn't we did do an FBI investigation. You know, they came up with no new information, and therefore to give a little bit of cover to some of the moderate Republicans and even moderate Democrats like Manchin that ended up voting for him. I think that was really a positioning as opposed to trying to really get at the truth, because I think at this point we haven't been able to find any corroborating evidence. Nothing definitive to state one way or another, and I think that really at that point it's not clear that you're going to be able to get any more than what we've gotten out of the process already.
Well, I think one of the more compelling moments in the last 72 hours or so is when the senator from Maine, Susan Collins, stood up and gave that speech on the Senate floor in which she announced her support of Justice Kavanaugh. And I remember when Senator Cory Booker decided that he was going to have a Spartacus moment at one moment, and that kind of fell flat. But boy, this really was a bit of a Spartacus moment for Susan Collins. She gave a 43-minute lecture really on what it means to investigate these things with thoroughness and with responsibility. It was quite a moment. And then she joined, I believe it was CNN this past weekend, and talked about the reason for her decisions.
Is it more likely than not that Brett Kavanaugh assaulted Christine Ford? And there was no corroborating evidence that he did so.
So, Adam, I was interested to get your take as I was prepping for the show even yesterday and saying, I haven't heard this burden of proof before around more likely than not. And yet when you're dealing with the he said, she said scenario, it seems like that's probably the way most of us are going to evaluate it.
Yes, and the court of public opinion doesn't have to have the same standard as a court of law, which is proof beyond a reasonable doubt. At the same time, and I've been saying this to some times that this has come up around on campus and other places, that, you know, you can't have accusation be condemnation, even in the court of public opinion. You need to have some corroboration. You need to have some capacity to say there has to be some independent verification. Does that mean sometimes guilty people will go free? Yes, but our entire system, I think, is built on making some things be provable. And I think Susan Collins was saying she's not denying that it could have happened, but she's saying that we can't condemn someone without a lot more proof.
And I think that I think her speech was interesting because she didn't talk in her speech was not very sound biteable. It didn't have these 30-second quips. It really was the development of a long 40-plus minute argument of how she reads Kavanaugh as a judge, how she reads his opinions, how she read the process, how she determines the standard and burden of proof. And I think she really did what we don't get a lot of these days, which is presented a sustained argument for why she did what she did that really, I think, was a cut above the kind of rhetoric that we normally see in politics today.
Yeah, it was good to see, Adam. I mean, it was, if nothing else, it was thoughtful, it was presented well, and even if you disagreed with her conclusions at the end of it, it did remind us what kind of conversation and debate we can have as a country, in which maybe we do differ, but at the end of the day, it's because of substantive issues and not because of sound bites and Twitter wars and trolling each other.
Yeah, I will say, you know, there were some people I was watching some of the reaction to it, saying, because she was defending how she believed that some of her more moderate to liberal positions wouldn't be undermined by Kavanaugh, that she believes he'll uphold Roe v. Wade. She believes he won't do anything regarding same-sex marriage or Obamacare. And so some people were saying, oh, this sounds worse about this makes me less likely to support Kavanaugh. I think that's important, but I think the thing that you can give her credit for, regardless of where you come down on Kavanaugh himself, is the way she presented that. There was no she did not ad hominem attack others. She really did present a model of discourse for even people who disagree with her to be able to respond in like kind.
It's Adam Carrington, who is a professor of political science at Hillsdale College. Adam, we'll take a short break, and when we come back, you had referenced just now Roe versus Wade. Obviously, that's the decision in the past that has gotten all the headlines and has created so much of the tension. But there's going to be a lot of important cases coming up here, I'm sure, in the next 12 to 18 months. So I would love for you to walk us through what we might anticipate moving forward to the Supreme Court, and we'll do that next on Faith Radio Mornings. Twelve minutes before the top of the hour, and we're joined by Adam Carrington here on Faith Radio Mornings. We talk political science with Adam about every other week on the show and love his perspective, his depth, and his detail. And Adam, I'd be curious, we're going to see obviously the swearing in of Justice Kavanaugh this evening. Does that make him a fully fledged member of the court? He can write decisions, he can move from here, he starts with a new term? Because didn't the term start at the beginning of this month?
It did. It started exactly a week ago today. The court always starts the first Monday of October, which happened to be the earliest possible this year. And you're right. They said that he will immediately jump in. Now, he cannot decide cases that have already been heard, and there's been a couple that were heard last week. So those are outside his purview because he didn't hear the oral arguments. He wasn't part of the original vote. But everything from here on out, really today on, that the court does, he'll be able to participate in and be one of the votes for. And I'll even say, if some of those earlier cases are tied and the court wishes, they're allowed to actually even have a rehearing. So that could be a really interesting case where if there's a rehearing that's ordered, we'll know that the vote was 4-4 split and that he would be the deciding vote. Everyone would be basically pitching to him. Now we can move back, and I'm a little relieved. We can move back to talking about cases and how we think judges will vote and what we think the constitutional principles are underneath them.
Well, and let's start with Roe versus Wade, at least briefly. I know you and I have covered this on the show in the past, but it's not like Roe versus Wade is going to come up for immediate vote as soon as this week. This isn't like the political season. Somebody actually has to establish a case, bring it before the court. Is this something that could even be possible in the next year or two?
It is possible, just because there have been some states in anticipation of Kennedy's retirement who have passed abortion restrictions that go beyond what Roe and then Planned Parenthood v. Casey, its accompanying case, allow. So we could see something in the next year or two, but even that, like you said, it's not going to be next week. The court has yet to agree to hear any case like that. So I don't see – there's a possibility it could happen even as early as the spring, but I would be very surprised. I think it's another year or two down the road that they hear any kind of abortion restriction. And And who knows whether they'll agree to take up the question of Roe itself or whether they'll just take up the particular abortion restriction. I think those are things where the court has such massive control over what it hears and what it doesn't that we'll have to just see how ambitious they want to be going forward.
Well, and I can't imagine if it ever actually did come before the Supreme Court. I would think that the kind of protesting and the kind of outrage in our country on both sides, oh boy, it would be far more significant than what we saw these last 2 weeks. And if Justice Kavanaugh and the other justices decided not to overturn Roe, I can't imagine what might happen either way in this if it ever does become a case in front of the court.
It really has become a flashpoint for our cultural divide, and not the only one, but one of the most visceral. And I think that, a big part of the battle that you saw about Kavanaugh was a battle over Roe v. Wade and what Roe v. Wade means. It's not merely the question of abortion, but how we as Americans and human beings view human sexuality and justice and the good for our society. And abortion is sort of a flashpoint on that, between how we value life, how we value the role of women in society, how we value all sorts of things. And I think that, yes, you're right. This is, as we asked if it could get any worse or any more intense, this really is just a preview and a tune-up for if and when that flashpoint happens.
Well, there's some other cases that will be in front of the court, I'm sure, at some point. Can you give us, in our remaining time, maybe one or two examples of some cases that will have impact but don't generate the kind of headlines that the abortion conversation does?
Right. I think one is going to be Timms versus Indiana, which is about the Eighth Amendment. There is a requirement that the U.S. government not give excessive fines as sort of a extra punishment. I think that's never been applied to the states. I think the court is probably going to say the states can't abuse its power by excessively fining. Another that is up is about the non-delegation doctrine, which has to do with how much can Congress give away its legislative power to bureaucrats. And I think the court has taken up already that question. And then I'll just mention a third that might come up. I think we're going to see some questions in the next year or so about religious liberty and same-sex marriage and religious liberty and transgender rights. I think those sorts of things are going to finally come to the court, again in the case of Masterpiece and for the first time in case of transgender cases.
Well, in the history of the Supreme Court, too, Adam, is this pretty unusual, the last maybe 10, 15, 20 years that we've seen, where the court has had such a significant influence on how we understand ourselves as people? What are some of the cultural norms? Or have we seen evidence in the past where the court really has made decisions that have affected us socially to the extent that they seem to these days?
There have been moments, and they've usually been moments of high division, say the Dred Scott decision in the 1850s about slavery, or some of the economic legislation in the early 1900s. But this tends to be the exception, not the rule, and it's not always a sign that the republic is in healthy shape as far as agreement. And I think what you see is, with all the division, a lot of people looking to the courts to make certain decisions that really the American people are going to have to decide, and that's a much messier process. But in the end, in a republic based on we the people, based on popular rule, those kind of determinations by the people, while messier to make, are often more lasting and more legitimate and a better move toward peace in the long term, even if maybe not seemingly in the short term.
Well, I'd be curious, too, as we see this play itself out, especially over the midterms here that are coming up just about a month from now, if the Democrats do take power in the House of Representatives, I've seen some headlines where they talk about we're going to impeach Kavanaugh. What is the impeachment process like? Is it similar to a president? And do we have any precedent where a Supreme Court justice has been impeached in the past?
We do. The process does work the same as with a president. The House votes by a majority to impeach, which is really to accuse, and then the Senate by two-thirds majority has to vote to remove. We only have one real instance of the Congress trying to do so, and that was in the early 1800s, Justice Samuel Chase. And he was impeached by the House, but was not convicted, not removed by the Senate. So we've never had one removed. We have had lower court judges impeached, but it's always been for usually crimes committed while a judge. So embezzlement, there have been instances where judges, I think as late as recently as 2012, a judge was in taking money to decide cases the way that litigants wanted him to. But this would be pretty unprecedented. Never have we had a Supreme Court judge, never for an accusation this old that predated him being on the court.
Well, it is going to be fascinating to watch over the next month and even years ahead. Adam, I really appreciate that you take the time like you do here for Faith Radio Mornings. Just your wisdom and insight is helpful for us to be able to think through these things.
It's great to be on here. It's really good of you guys to let me do so. I appreciate it.
Well, have a great week, Adam. Look forward to the next time we have a chance to chat.
You too. Thank you.
We'll take a break here and wrap up our first hour of the show and preview what's coming next here in the second hour on Faith Radio Mornings. I just love it when Adam Carrington comes on the air with us on Faith Radio Mornings. He's sort of this human accessible textbook. I can ask him almost anything, and he just turns the pages in his brain to page 75 and references some sort of obscure case from the 1950s that is completely relevant. He's just absolutely amazing. Love his perspective and how clear he can set this in front of all of us about both the realities of our past and the implications into the future. Well, looking forward to the next hour of the show. I know first up, we're going to be joined by Eugene Robinson, who is the color commentator for the NFL team, the Carolina Panthers. We'll talk a little bit about the state of the NFL. We'll talk about the concussion epidemic that seems to be happening. And then Eugene Robinson is also part of Man Up Ministry, and he'll talk at length about some of his passion around helping alleviate the fatherlessness crisis in our country.
Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at myfaithradio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener-supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at myfaithradio.com.